You're listening to The Naked Scientist. And now from the colourful world of coral reefs, we shall briefly move across to the link between the land and the sea and the effect that pouring fertilisers has on crops has on biodiversity. On the line now, we have Stan Harpole from the University of California in Irvine. Hi, Stan.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Thanks so much for coming along on The Naked Scientist. Now, Stan, you describe yourself as a community ecologist. What does that actually mean?
Yes, so I study how different species, how different organisms coexist, how they interact, what controls biodiversity, what contributes to the loss of biodiversity.
Cool, that sounds great. Now, in your latest paper that came out in the journal Nature, you looked at the link between crop fertilisers and the number of species or the biodiversity that we find in grasslands in California. Now, why did you expect there to be a link between fertilisers and biodiversity?
Well, there's a long-standing theoretical prediction that the diversity of niches, and by niche I mean the different ways that species compete and specialise in nature, that the more complex their niches are, the greater the number of niches, the more species there should be. And that if you do something that reduces the number of niches, there should be fewer species. For plants, then, they're competing for things like nitrogen and phosphorus, potassium, water, light, and all these different things. And what we're finding is that natural systems are really quite complex. Plants are competing for many, many different things simultaneously. As we add nitrogen, as we add phosphorus, we lose a niche, basically. And as we add more and more things, make them superabundant, they no longer compete for them, and we see a loss of species.
It seems to me a little bit counterintuitive that if you, I would also possibly expect that you'd get more species if you have more nutrients to kind of go round, if you like. So it seems slightly odd that this is the other way around.
It does. In one way, it's been described as having too much of too many good things.
And I see, right.
And so what happens then, if you add too much nitrogen, too much phosphorus, that you're What's happening then is the system is becoming limited by just one thing, usually possibly just light, perhaps magnesium or something. But it becomes limited by just one thing, and there just becomes one way for species to differentiate and compete. And so there are just fewer opportunities for them to coexist. And that's what we're seeing in aquatic systems too, is that as we add more and more fertilizers, what happens is it becomes very dark. The algae grow really quickly. Things become so dark that there's only one species that's best adapted to those really low light conditions that can survive.
And so you've got these theories about the interplay between fertilizers and biodiversity. And how did you actually go about testing those theories and what's actually happening in the real world?
Yeah, so I work in grassland communities. These are natural prairie-type systems. They have many, many native species, many exotic species, but there's fairly high grassland diversity. And then we added combinations of nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium and water, and what we found is if we added just one thing, that there wasn't much impact on diversity. And as we added more and more things, and up to all four things at once, we saw the biggest loss of diversity. So this is evidence for this sort of loss of niche dimension. So as we take away each one of these specialties that plants have, there are fewer opportunities for them to coexist, and we end up with like in aquatic systems, the species that's the best competitor for really high nutrients but really low light conditions, and so just one species.
And how long did it take for these changes to take place? How long did you have to keep watching?
This was within 2 years. So it was very quick. We've also looked at really long-term data sets, and this loss of diversity can persist for 150 years. There's a great experiment in the UK, the Park Grass Experiment. They've been applying fertilizer since 1856, 1858.
Some long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
That sounds great.
And there's no recovery of species diversity even after all that time. So it can be a very long-term effect.
That's amazing. But surely a reduction in the biodiversity in terms of field crops, because we're talking about fertilizers here, I take it these nutrients that you were looking at, nitrogen, phosphorus, are the kind of things that we put on crops, are they? That's the sort of thing we're doing to fertilize the crops.
But the problem is that they don't stay on just the agricultural land. The nitrogen can volatilize, they go up into the atmosphere and come back down as rain or precipitation. Phosphorus can wash off into streams and then wash into rivers and then into the gulfs and coasts and so on. And so they're very large dead zones, what they're called, these huge areas where there's been a lot of fertilizer input, tens of thousands of square kilometers. All this fertilizer causes really high algae growth, causes a really strong decrease in light. And then one way that marine systems differ from like the grassland systems I work on is that as all these algae fall to the bottom of the ocean and die, they decompose. And in the process, oxygen is depleted. And the oxygen then kills the fish. And this creates this dead zone.
And I take it that I'm actually pretty ignorant about just how much fertiliser we use globally every year. Is it really huge amounts that we're still using? I mean, we talk about organic farming. I imagine that's still really tiny proportion. But
yes,
fertilisers really are pretty, used everywhere in huge amounts, are they?
And nitrogen in particular. Humans have become probably as big of an input of nitrogen into natural systems as natural processes are. We are one of the drivers of the nitrogen cycle now globally.
And you think also possibly there's a link to our burning fossil fuels and this sort of input of nutrients into systems. Is that right?
Absolutely. A lot of nitrogen then comes from fossil fuel combustion. These nitric acids then eventually come back down somewhere, and they're usually in places where nitrogen is not so abundant. And so we're increasing the abundance of nitrogen in systems that were typically pretty limited in nitrogen.
And you mentioned already that we had this long-term study based here in the UK and that we haven't seen much recovery in that time. So if we aren't seeing any recovery in systems, is there anything that we can do? You're finding out this, studying more about the effects that fertilisers are having. But what can we actually do about this in terms of the impact it's having on biodiversity?
Yeah, I think the main thing is to reduce the inputs of nutrient pollution to natural systems. And that can be changing our fertilization techniques in managed agricultural systems. It can reduce fossil fuel combustion. But then we can also try to manage natural systems so that we can, find ways that we can remove excess nutrients if possible. There's been some study trying to restore natural systems by decreasing the amount of nitrogen available. And that's still work that's in early stages, but there's effort along those lines.
So still things that we can do. I wanted to bring Annelise back in at this point because
okay.
You already mentioned, Stan, talking about the impact in the water systems, and we're looking at species that tend to grow much more quickly under high nutrient conditions and cause this sort of dead zones as well. But we know on coral reefs as well that if we add nutrients that we can cause an imbalance, can't we, with algae growth. Is that right, Annelise?
Yes, I mean, definitely. Nutrient impact will greatly increase macroalgae on coral reefs.
That's big, fleshy, kind of...
Like seaweed.
Seaweed, yeah, okay.
yes, and because coral reefs, with their symbiotic relationship with their zooxanthellae, they have to have light in order to live, which means that they're very restricted by depth. So generally, coral reefs only thrive in the upper 30 metres of the oceans. So within this zone, there are lots and lots and lots of animals that want to live within this zone, and so competition for space is a huge problem. And so with nutrient enrichment, if there's more macroalgae, then that could outcompete the corals. And especially that will take over any bare surfaces, so coral larvae can't then settle and the coral reefs can't develop anymore.
And we're seeing that quite a lot, aren't we? We're seeing reefs that are becoming sort of dominated by algae, and then it's very difficult to shift back to a system where they're actually dominated by corals again,
difficult.
Like you described.
Yeah, and one big problem as well is human impact of overfishing, because if the fishermen are removing the herbivorous fish, which actually will control the macroalgal population, if those fish are removed from the ecosystem, then that allows more macroalgae to grow, so that will further outcompete the corals.
So it's all a big complex system indeed. Well, thanks so much, Stan, for coming on the show for us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Excellent. And we'll talk to Annelise probably a little bit. We'll keep her here in the studio.
Fancy listening to the Naked Scientists in your bed, on your way to work, or even at work? Why not subscribe to our podcast? For more information, visit nakedscientists.com/podcast.
That's right, you're listening to a fishy episode of The Naked Scientist with me, Helen and Kat. And we have Annelise Hagen in the studio talking all about coral reefs and wonderful things that we can see, but also the effects that we're having on those ecosystems and the problems we're causing. Now, I've had a couple of emails here along the fishy line, some questions, which I thought I'd possibly throw out at this point and see if anyone in the studio has some ideas on. They're both along the same lines.